Part 1. Chapter 1. Waiting to Hurry. The Wookiee sighed a low rumble and gazed at the metal in his palm. On the humans, it looked substantial and solid, fit to be worn around the neck. In his hand, the scale was altered, and if he brought his fingers together, he could conceal it entirely. A pretty thing, hastily engraved in a stylized flower, meant perhaps to recall the emblem of the Republic. At its heart, a rising sun, halfway above the horizon, both symbolized the dawn of a new hope in the wake of this victory over the Galactic Empire, and recalled the Death Star's destruction. He sighed a second time, tucked the award into the satchel that hung from the bandolier of bowcaster ammunition slung over his left shoulder, and leaned forward in his seat to peer out the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. Outside, rebels ran back and forth across the hangar, hastily preparing their evacuation. The base on Yavin 4 was, to put it mildly, compromised. With the destruction of the Death Star, it would be a day at most, perhaps even less, before the Imperial fleet arrived to reduce anything they found to rubble and dust. While they might still have been flushed with their victory, the Rebellion's high command knew better than to believe they could repel or even withstand such an assault. They had been lucky with the Death Star, and it had cost them all the same. They wouldn't get lucky twice. The plan, as the Wookiee understood it, was for the band of freedom fighters to scatter across the galaxy in as many directions as they could manage at once, with the goal of meeting up again at a later date, and preferably in a much safer place. He huffed to himself, wondering how the rebels hoped to survive. Their own fleet, and he used the word generously, was already scattered. All that remained on the fourth moon of Yavin were the 3 snub fighters, 2 X-wings, and a single Y-wing that had made it through the battle, plus some 36 or so transports of various shapes, makes, and sizes, all of which had been past their prime even before the fall of the Republic. The Wookiee didn't fancy their chances. That said, he understood their fire. He was a Wookiee, after all, and he knew passion. His were a proud people, a people who had lived for hundreds of years peacefully on their wooded homeworld of Kashyyyk until the Clone Wars. He had been younger then, just 180, and he had fought the Separatist battle droids. He had witnessed the betrayal of the clones and the beginning of the Empire. He had seen his people, his brothers and sisters, his family, put in chains and sold as slaves throughout the galaxy. He had been put in chains himself, and just the memory of it made a growl rise in his throat. So he understood the Rebellion. In truth, he would be standing with them if it weren't for 2 things, the Corellian and the ship. He wouldn't abandon either of them. He was bound to both, as they were to him. Han Solo had not been a man to inspire trust when they'd first met. He'd been a fast talker, smug, even arrogant. He had seemed more interested in looking out for himself than in looking out for others. Enlightened self-interest was how Solo himself had described it.
I don't take an interest in my own well-being in this galaxy. Nobody else is going to do it for me, pal, he had said.
Even with that, though, Solo had proven the Wookiee wrong. He'd proven him wrong when the 2 of them had fled to the Outer Rim to survive amidst bounty hunters, pirates, and fellow smugglers trying to scratch out a living wage working for the Hutts. He'd proven him wrong time and again, and if the Wookiee had learned one thing about his friend and partner, it was that there was no telling what the Corellian would care about or why. Despite all his posturing and swagger, there was a core to Han Solo, as golden as the medals they'd all received for their part in the recent battle. The comm on the control console overhead lit up, flashing blue and bleating its odd sing-song. On other ships, the comm would just chirp incessantly, calling for attention. But the Falcon was not, and never had been, like other ships. Just another of her idiosyncrasies, another of the things that made him love her so. That was the second reason, of course. This ship. When the boy from Tatooine, Skywalker, had seen the Falcon for the first time back in Mos Eisley, he described it as a piece of junk. Solo had taken it personally, but the Wookiee could understand why Luke had thought so. He didn't agree, of course, but he understood. The Falcon looked like just another Corellian YT-1300 light freighter, and there had to be thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of them in service throughout the galaxy. Her cockpit, for reasons no one but the designers back at Corel Industries could understand, was posted to the starboard side and jutted at an odd angle instead of being mounted on the center line. Her engines were overpowered for her size, but her controls were so sensitive as to be paranoid, which meant she was temperamental and needed a pilot and co-pilot to manage her in flight. Even then, she was liable to slip out of control if both operators didn't know exactly what they were doing. That was just the YT-1300 series as a whole. But the Falcon took all those characteristics and multiplied them exponentially. She was bruised. She was dented. She needed paint and near constant maintenance. Easily half the money they pulled in doing runs for Jabba the Hutt or whoever else went to upkeep. New parts. Fuel. She drank fuel like she'd been wandering the Dune Sea for weeks without water. Her gravity emulators had an annoying and, frankly, alarming tendency to cut out during sharp maneuvering, which would send you across the cabin if you weren't strapped in when it happened. The multiple computers that worked to keep everything on the ship running in concert not only had developed over the years their own dialects, but at times seemed to feud among themselves. And you didn't want to get the Wookiee started on the state of the ion flux stabilizers, or the way the Duvopec acceleration compensators would not just seek to compensate, but would instead do precisely the opposite. Oh, but she was fast. She was the fastest ship he'd ever flown, had ever seen. She cut through space and atmosphere alike as if born to it. And seated side by side, he and Solo could make her dance in ways that would have made those designers back in the day on Corellia drop their jaws. They had modified almost every single part of the engines, from the bolts to the main drive. Coaxing, teasing, more power, more speed. They had taken her apart and put her back together more times than the Wookiee could count. And each time, the Falcon had rewarded them by giving them more in return, by urging them to push her further. He loved this ship. Reaching with one long arm, the Wookiee slapped the flashing comm button and snarled a greeting, asking Solo what was taking him so long.
Oh my, Chewbacca! Wherever did you learn such language?
The Wookiee chuckled. It wasn't Solo calling, but the protocol droid.
Captain Solo asks you to join him in the briefing room.
The Wookiee frowned and growled his response.
I'm sure I don't have the first idea. He says that you need to join him at once, because the princess won't take no for an answer, and he feels it would be more persuasive coming from you.
The Wookiee grinned, mostly because he knew there was nobody to see it. Those two had been at each other from the moment they'd met. This explained things. They were supposed to have lifted off more than an hour earlier to make their way back to Tatooine. Between the reward money for rescuing the princess from the Death Star and the fee they'd been promised from the Alderaan run besides, they had more than enough money to square things with Jabba. Enough, even, to get back into his good graces and have him call off the bounty hunters he had already set on their trail. But that would work only if they brought the money to Jabba. If the bounty hunters brought them in first, it would be a different situation entirely. Jabba didn't deal kindly with those who owed him money. He'd take their freedom and maybe their lives, and he'd definitely take the Falcon. None of those outcomes appealed to the Wookiee. He knew for a fact that they appealed to Solo even less. The Wookiee barked a response to C-3PO, slapped the comm button again, and swung up from his seat, ducking out of habit as he stepped out of the cockpit and knocked the pair of novelty chance dice that he'd hung there as a joke some years ago. There was only one thing that would make Han Solo delay their departure, and that was a pretty girl. He had to admit, he was curious to find out just what the pretty girl wanted.
"I'm not part of this," Han Solo said. "I'm not a part of your rebellion. I'm not a freedom fighter. And I don't work for you, your highness."
Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan took two quick steps forward, her face tilting up to glare at the smuggler. If Solo's nearly half a meter of height over her impressed her at all, it didn't show. She raised an index finger, directing it at the smuggler as if contemplating poking him in the eye. "If you worked for me," she said, "I'd have fired you already."
"If I worked for you, lady, I'd have quit."
Solo crossed his arms, certain he had, for the moment, claimed the last word. The princess remained motionless for a moment, using a glare that had once, he imagined, reduced her opponents in the now-dissolved Imperial Senate to tears. One of the rebel soldiers, busy dismantling the control room, edged past, her arms full of equipment, carefully avoiding eye contact. During the battle, the room had been cluttered with displays tracking the Death Star's relentless approach to the Yavin Moon, monitors broadcasting the pilot chatter as fighter after fighter had been lost, downed by anti-starship fire or the precision work of their TIE opponents. The base, as Solo understood it, had been set up in a temple to the gods of the long-forgotten and long-dead people of Yavin 4. The rebels had found it and made it the heart of their operations. Now it would again be what it was, a legacy to those lost and forgotten. A battered service droid whined its way past, carrying one of the monitors, and Leia took that as an excuse to break their staring contest, turning away in barely disguised disgust. She was angry, and not afraid to show it, and Solo had to admit he took a certain pleasure in winding her up. Her buttons were so easy to press. She was undoubtedly one of the most beautiful women he had ever met. And coming from Han Solo, that actually meant something, because he'd seen a lot of the galaxy and his share of beautiful women. That she was smart, brave, perhaps, given her position in the rebellion, suicidally so, and gave as good as she got, only made her more attractive to him. She was also as stubborn as a Gundark. And he appreciated that, too. In fact, he kind of liked her. Especially with all they had recently been through together, with the kid and the old man. But there was absolutely no way he was going to tell her that. Especially when she was trying to guilt him into maybe dying for a cause he had no part in and wanted no part of. One of the doors into the makeshift and now diminishing control room opened, and a trio of soldiers carted more equipment out as Chewbacca ducked his head to step inside. Solo caught his partner's eye, and the Wookiee nodded slightly in greeting. Princess Leia watched the Wookiee's approach, tracking him to Solo's side, then turned fully to face the smuggler again.
"People will die."
She said it simply, a statement of truth, looking at him with those brown eyes that seemed to see everything.
"I don't know them,"
Solo said. For an instant, just an instant, he saw the disappointment on her face and felt something dangerously close to guilt.
"Let me ask you something,"
Leia said to the Wookiee. She jerked a thumb in Solo's direction.
"Is there actually a heart beating in there, or just a safe where he keeps his credits?"
Chewbacca snorted, then looked to Solo, canting his head. He barked.
"Oh, no, no," Solo said. "You haven't heard what it is she wants us to do, Chewie. Go ahead, your shining royalness. Tell him about this little suicide mission you've got up your sleeve."
"It's not a suicide mission. Not if you follow the plan."
Leia tapped the control on the main battle display, one of the only pieces of equipment still remaining and powered, and only because it would take the help of another half-dozen droids to move it. The display illuminated, showing a map of the galaxy. She tapped the console again, this time working quickly, and together Solo and Chewbacca watched as the map zoomed down, rescaling itself over and over again to center on a section of the outer rim. With a final press of a button, the map froze, displaying a system of 6 planets.
Psircon, in the outer rim, on the edge of Hutt space,
Leia said, indicating the second planet from the system's star.
Outside the Imperial Sphere, so it gets a lot of traffic from people like you.
Chewbacca snuffed.
She means smugglers, Solo said.
No, I mean criminals,
Leia said. Chewbacca raised an eyebrow.
The problem with being a rebellion is that we don't have resources,
Leia said, staring at the projection.
And what we do have is never enough. We have to stay on the move. We're dealing with it now, with this evacuation. You see it all around you. The Empire has everything. All of the resources, all of the troops, all of the spies. For us to survive, we have to plan not just one move or 3 moves, but 5 moves ahead. We have to have contingencies. Not just where we're going next, but where we might be going if that location is compromised. If it falls through, we have to have options.
If you're planning on hiding your rebellion on Circon, it's going to be a short one, Solo said. Too close to the huts. They'll sell you out in a second.
She looked from the map long enough to shoot Solo another withering glare.
Thank you, Captain, for that brilliant strategic insight.
She motioned to the map.
Circon isn't the location of the next Rebel base.
You're smarter than you act.
She ignored him, tapping the controls again. The map shifted to the side, and a new image sprang into place. A hollow of a human male, roughly 20 standard years old. Solo didn't recognize him.
This is Lieutenant Emat, leader of the Shrikes.
Leia paused, staring at the hollow.
The Shrikes are special recon for the Rebellion. It's a small team, and their mission is very simple. They're responsible for identifying, securing, and preparing new locations for the Rebellion. They compile the list, they pick the rendezvous points, they explore all the options.
That's a lot of very sensitive information for one man to be carrying,
Solo said.
Yes. It's also one of the only ways for us to remain secure. The fewer people who know a secret, the fewer who can give it away.
Chewie rumbled agreement.
But he knows, Han. Do you understand? Emat knows not only where we're going, but where we might be going. He knows the rendezvous points. He knows where we've hidden weapons, food, medicine. He knows all of it.
Solo nodded. Something was turning sour in his stomach, as if he'd eaten a meal he maybe shouldn't have. He had a bad feeling about this.
The Shrikes were ambushed by the Imperial Security Bureau on Tanab, the princess said. Emat escaped the ambush, but the rest of his team were killed. He managed to get a burst transmission to us, letting us know what happened, letting us know that he's made it off-planet, on his way to Circon. But the ISB is on his trail. He's alone, and he's exposed.
Chewie huffed softly under his voice. He and Solo both could see this coming.
The Falcon is the only ship fast enough to reach Circon in time.
She pressed the controls on the map once more, and the images winked out. She turned to look at them. First Chewie, then Han.
If the ISB captures Emat, they'll get everything. They'll torture him. They'll drug him. They'll get everything. It will be the end of the Rebellion.
She wasn't angry anymore. She wasn't pleading. She wasn't begging. She was just looking at them. At Solo and his friend and partner, waiting. She'd made her argument. Solo preferred it when she was angry. Chewbacca growled, a short string of barks that ended in a heavy rumble. Solo looked at him in amazement.
Think this one through, Chewie!
The Wookiee snuffed. Solo shook his head.
You're supposed to back me up, not side with her.
The Wookiee snuffed again. Solo couldn't believe this.
She's asking us to fly into a system on the edge of Hutt space to rescue a guy who maybe is already dead. Never mind that the ISB is after him. Never mind that Sir Khan is teeming with the worst scum this galaxy has to offer. Never mind that Jabba's got bounty hunters taking numbers to come after us, if he hasn't sent them already.
Chewbacca grunted and barked.
I know it's the Outer Rim. I know it's on the way. But even if we succeed, we'll have to take him to the rendezvous point, or else it's not much of a rescue. This isn't our fight, pal!
This time, the Wookiee remained silent, just looking at Solo with those blue eyes. Leia was looking at him, too. Solo sighed.
Some fights, he thought, you just can't win. We're gonna need the passphrase, whatever it is, so E-Mat will recognize us,
Solo said. He tried not to sound petulant. Leia smiled, as if she'd known all along he'd say yes. Solo scowled.
And I expect to be paid for this, he added.